This is Fresh Air. Actress Claire Bloom has played many of the great roles, Ophelia in Hamlet, Juliet, Nora in A Doll's House, and Hedda Gabler. Much of her career has been spent on the London stage, where she's worked with the great actors Laurence Olivier, John Gielgud, and Paul Scofield. These days, Bloom lives in the United States with her husband, novelist Philip Roth. She's been appearing in films and has worked with Woody Allen in Crimes and Misdemeanors and with Stephen Frears in Sammy and Rosie Get Laid. This week, Bloom is appearing on the stage at Symphony Space in New York in a program called Women Observed, Four Dramatic Portraits of Passionate Women from Literature. It's a one-woman show with Bloom performing segments from Jane Eyre, Anna Karenina, The Turn of the Screw, A Room of One's Own, and Mrs. Dalloway. I asked her what attracted her to these particular women.
First of all, the whole idea was to present great novels, obviously abridged, but in their entirety as far as the story goes. I then had to find what I considered a great novel, a first-rate novel, and one that has as its central character a woman, because I didn't fancy myself as Captain Ahab or Lord Jim. So that immediately confines one to a certain literature. From that, I have chosen slowly because some of these readings these performances, I'd prefer to call them, I've done before. Anna Karenina, I'm doing for the first time. I chose women that I thought were complex, interesting, and to be extremely pragmatic, that were dramatizable.
What's so compelling about doing a one-woman show?
I've done them now for a long time. I do two Shakespeare separate performances, and I've been doing these. And for an actor, it gives you the flexibility to hold your life in your own hands and not wait for the telephone to ring to be offered a role. That's the basic. So that you can do it when you like, in interesting places. But the excitement is that you have to hold an audience for 2 hours, 2.5 hours, by yourself. It's a terrific challenge. And the concentration required is enormous, from you and I think from them.
We often hear of actresses, and I think this has been an ongoing problem, complaining about the lack of female roles, or even some of the narrow characterizations often offered to female actors. Is this your way then of creating it and performing it yourself, a way of making something happen that might not be offered to you?
Well, it isn't so much that it won't be offered to me, but that it isn't done. I mean, literature, let's face it, is not central to the theater as it is now. In fact, the theater as it is now pretty well doesn't exist. So what remains? The other things that I do, television and film. Yes, very, very occasionally you get something like Brideshead Revisited that I did, which is taken from not a great novel, but certainly a wonderful novel. But this is your chance to create the great, great characters. And yes, there is your Cleopatra or Mrs. Alving, or, you know, there are some very wonderful roles for women, and I don't mean for children. But this is something else. These are really the big stuff. Big time.
The big stuff meaning it's classics. It's from the classics.
No, I don't mean that. It makes it sound dead. I mean it's big, psychologically involved, emotional attack that's required, complex understanding of an extremely psychologically complex woman like Anna Karenina or the governess in The Turn of the Screw, who's completely cracked, and you have to chart her course through this terrible journey she makes from the time she comes to this house to the time the boy dies. You go on enormous journeys with these women that very rarely in theatrical terms, are you offered such a journey? I've made those journeys, and I've played Nora, and I've played Hedda, and I've played Blanche DuBois and Juliet, and all those. But this is those great roles are indeed rare, much rarer for women than for men.
When did you begin to have acting lessons? When did you start to act?
I didn't really have many acting lessons. My aunt was a rather famous actress in England. I always wanted to be an actress. I acted at school. I don't remember anything about school. In fact, I met a cousin the other day who was with me at school, and she remembered all kinds of things, and all I remembered was playing the princess in Rumpelstiltskin. So that was the only thing that interested me. Now, thank goodness, I have other interests too, but that was it, and that was what I wanted to do, and that was what I did. I did go to something called a wonderful place called the Guildhall School of Music and Drama for a year, and I went to the Central School for a year. But then I was offered a professional job by the BBC, and I was told by the Central School I had to choose them or us, and I said, "Well, thank you, goodbye." So I didn't have much training. I trained by seeing great theatre and doing little parts and walk-ons and understudies, and you know, that's the other way to go about it.
Well, I know that during World War II, during really the Blitz of London, you came to the United States to get out from underneath the bombing there. This, I assume, was the British War Relief effort brought you over here.
That's right, yes.
And you really felt that at that point in your life, your childhood had ended. That I guess being brought to this country and being taken from your father, that somehow brought the end of your childhood.
Yeah, I had to grow up fast. Yes. We all did. I mean, I think that it's an interesting subject, evacuees from England, because after all, we were not from a country that was invaded, or we thought we were going to be, which is why we left. But most of us, I didn't leave of my own free will because I was 9, and I've always been slightly ashamed of it, funnily enough.
Why?
Because other people didn't, you know. The thing is, my parents were told by the government, if you have a sponsor in America or a relative, send your children out. So they did. But we actually went back in 1943 through Portugal. I don't know why. I just always have.
People, I think, have always assumed, and perhaps it's from the sound of your voice and even your look, that somehow you came from the British aristocracy.
Who assumes that?
Well, this is what I have read people saying about you.
Oh, how terrific.
And it was a theme in certainly reading about you.
There's never been an actress, you know, who's come from the so-called aristocracy, whatever that is. Most actresses are middle class, as I am, and working class. Aristocracy does not breed actors. You have to be totally unsure of yourself and longing for acceptance and to create yourself in some other form and not be all that pleased with who you are. Anyway, I know nothing about aristocrats, so I couldn't tell you.
Okay.
I did, however, play one once in Brideshead Revisited, and I thought, well, this is a world I don't know a damn thing about. Mm. And then I did have one friend who is, and I thought, well, I'd better watch her and do what she does, that's all. And it worked. I won't say who she is. So that's as near as I come.
I'm speaking with Claire Bloom, and she is, of course, an actress with a long and distinguished acting career, and she'll perform her one-woman show called Women Observe later this week and weekend in New York City at Symphony Space. And we will take a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with actress Claire Bloom. When did you begin your film career?
With Limelight. With Chaplin. Nobody can begin with a greater flourish of drums and trumpets.
How did you catch his eye, his attention?
I was in a play in London. I was 19, and I was doing a play called Ring Round the Moon, where I played a dancer. And I had been trained as a dancer, but I was never good enough, and I certainly never danced. But I could move like one. I only say that because it's important to the film. And Chaplin was looking for someone small, dark, English, young, and who either was a dancer or could look like one. Well, I fitted all those things, but I mean, there I was in London, and I knew nothing about this at all. A friend of his, the playwright Arthur Lawrence, came to see the play, apparently, this is how it happened, recommended me to Chaplin. And then I got a wire from Chaplin asking me to send photographs, which I did. And then there was a long pause. And then he asked me to come and test with him, which I did. And then I waited 3 months and I had the role.
What was it like to play opposite him?
like nothing in the world could ever be again. I'm afraid I hit the tops very early. It was a magical, superb experience, and I was the most fortunate young actress in the world.
Did he expect a kind of obedience from his actors and actresses? Did he expect them to do what he said?
Yes, he did, and I happily did it. It was all right. Everything he said was correct. Yes, he did.
You were young, as you say. You were about age 19, and this was your first film. Do you think you would have been so obedient if you worked with him today?
If it was Chaplin, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, no question. If, you know, I would very happily, as an actress, put myself in the hands of somebody I trusted. The trouble is there are not that many people you trust. But it's rather wonderful, you know. You just know that you have the most wonderful guide and critic, and that you can't actually go wrong, because somebody will say, will stop you and put you on the right track. It's not, it's unfortunately fairly rare, but I had it with him, and yes, I would do it when I'm 103.
I know it's unfair to talk to an actor about their acting style, but there is something that you did say in your autobiography about the kind of acting temperament, I guess, that you have. And you talk about wanting or working towards a performance totally in control of uncontrollable emotions, rather than a performance that displays everything.
You know, that was 10 years ago, and even now one changes. I really would have to say that one adapts oneself to the role. And yes, of course it is true that if you cry, the audience doesn't. But that's not altogether true. I think you have to be... You see, I didn't mean that you weren't involved emotionally in what you were doing. Though I know you didn't say that.
No,
did say that.
No.
I'm just trying to define what I meant, actually. Yes, you have to be in control of the emotions. You can't let them all over the place. That's perfectly true. You have to channel them into their most powerful form. And that means that though part of you experiences the emotion, the other part has to be in control. That's absolutely true. I do believe that. I think every actor does. After all, you can't perform, not that I want to anymore, but you can't perform 8 times a week. And let your guts spill out. The nearest I did that was in Blanche DuBois, and I, along with, I think, nearly every actress who played it, paid for it for a long time afterwards in terms of their health.
Can you be more...
Well, you can't play that part otherwise. You play it on the edge of your nerves all the time, and you actually cannot play that part otherwise. You just have to do it every night like that.
How did you pay for that role with your health?
Well, I was very thin and underweight and hideous and exhausted and emotional. I won't say I had a nervous breakdown because I don't think it was that. But I had a year of kind of ill health. But it's so did Vivian Leigh, and it's a very dangerous part, funnily enough. It enters into your life very much. In some way, which I find hard to explain, but it does.
Does that make that a favorite part for you? I mean, it sounds like you're paying a terrible price in a way.
It was worth every penny. Yeah. It's the greatest part I've ever played, and I actually think the best performance I ever gave. And I'd do it again, yes, tomorrow.
Can you tell us why it was your favorite part?
Every line, every second, every moment, every minute, everything is perfect. It's the most extraordinary play in terms of the story, the richness of the story, the confrontations between Mitch and Blanche and Stanley and Blanche, Stella and Blanche. Her, the terrible kind of downward spiral of her emotional self during the play to her going off to the lunatic asylum in the end. And the language is so beautiful, and the music and everything about it, the atmosphere of it that Tennessee Williams created was absolute perfection. It's a very great, great role.
There's a chapter in your autobiography called The Worst of It, talking about the fact that unemployment is part of being employed as an actor or actress, that even the best actress and actor has time off, time in between roles. Does that get any easier when you have the kind of body of work that you have, that the lull between performances gets easier just because you have acted in so many productions?
Oh, immensely easier. First of all, I mean, anyone who, you know, after a certain age sits and waits for the telephone to ring really has to have their head tested, because that's not a way to live. Secondly, yes, there is one nice thing that comes with getting older, and I can say I've done practically everything I wanted to do. But the other thing goes back to the very beginning of our conversation. Why am I doing these performances? Because I don't like to be someone who is passive and sits and waits for the phone to ring. I think it's infantilizing a horrible situation to be in. Now, the fact is that, yes, the phone rings, but it can very well be, you know, things you really don't want to do. So I now have the wonderful position of saying, sorry, but I'm going to Boston to do four performances next week, and I'm not free.
Claire Bloom, thank you very much for your time today. Appreciate it.
Not at all.
Claire Bloom is appearing in her one-woman show later this week at Symphony Space in New York City. This is Fresh Air.